outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, Kyle, I've been resurrected by Wikipedia, no less.
What does that even mean? How can you be resurrected on Wikipedia?
Well, remember I was in Chattanooga. I told you about the lady that mourned my passing for about 40 minutes between Sarah saying she left me and she lost me. And she likes me. So that was sad. Then someone sent me a text from Arkansas who met me one evening, sent me a text saying, hey, by the way, I looked you up on Wikipedia yesterday. They have you dying on January 28th, 2014. And I went, what? So I jumped over to Wikipedia. Sure enough, birth date's right. March 21, 1953, died January 28, 2014.
Wow.
All my referrals to everything, which Wikipedia is incredibly inaccurate on my bio anyway, but it's all, what it says is all in the past tense. So we've had a good laugh over that, but I just checked it today because I knew I was going to spring it on you as we started this podcast, and lo and behold, someone's got a hold of them and changed it. So I'm alive again. I am alive. Hallelujah.
So you've been living in a new resurrection, according to Wikipedia, for almost a decade now.
No, for a decade, I didn't exist. I'm alive again. Because if Wikipedia says you're dead, dude. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is, I guess. No wonder my email load's cut down a lot.
People thought you passed away almost 10 years ago.
They did, but no, I'm back. And that's going to be... probably pretty bad news for some people, but good news for Sarah anyway.
Well, I mean, it's a completely different environment. I'm getting to podcast with what I'm experiencing as Clint Eastwood in a storage room / overflow room. I mean, there's just kind of this deep, gravelly Western, I'm going to get you, boy, background voice that I keep hearing in the back of my head as I'm hearing you talk today. So it seems like you're a bit under the weather today.
I think it's go ahead and make my day. I got home and got the flu somehow. So I've not been feeling too well. I'm doing fairly okay physically, but the voice is gone and I've had kind of a sore throat for a couple of days. So laying low, trying to manage that. Thought we'd do this and see if I can survive a podcast without coughing my head off, and we'll be done.
You did fairly well on the first couple of takes. I mean, the live group's going to be able to enjoy that. So
I'm afraid I'm wasting my voice on things that weren't recorded for the wider audience. In any case, we could have pulled the audio off of the video, but not going to do it.
That's fair.
So Sarah and I made it back, man, across the southern U.S. Made it, got one of my lifetime dreams in from the time I've been a little kid. I like that voice cracking up there. It sounds like puberty. One of my lifetime dreams was to go to Carlsbad Caverns. I've seen pictures of it, National Geographic, when I was a kid, probably 8, 9, 10, wishing I could go there someday. My travels have never taken me anywhere close to it, but because of the weather kept pushing us south, I got to go to Carlsbad Caverns with Sarah, and man, was it worth it.
Gee. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they're remote. They're kind of out there by themselves.
They're way out there. But we couldn't get on the 40. It just was too cold for the vehicle. So we had to keep pushing down south, got on the 10, finally went through El Paso and came home the southern reaches. But man, walking into that cavern, I'm telling you, for somebody like Sarah, who's not as cavern nut as I am, but it is you come up to this big hole in the ground, this big old cave, and the path going into it's going almost straight downhill. You're on a switchback of kind of a asphalt path. You're kind of winding through where all the hundreds of thousands of bats come out every spring and summer. They're not there when we were there, so we didn't see that, but they come out twilight and come back in the morning and just wind your way down and watch the whole behind you just shrink and shrink and shrink. It's just awesome. And if you're a little claustrophobic and not necessarily a fan of caves, it can be a bit unnerving. I even thought about that walking down, because Sarah is kind of like, where are we going?
And
but the cave is so big inside, you can't believe how big it is inside. It's like 14 football fields long, and it's massive inside. But when you're going in there, you just don't know what you're gonna get. And kind of think about that, and just even the parable of that and her journey through trauma, when you kind of go down into the darkness. And a lot of people stand on the edge of that cave and kind of, I don't know that I want to go down there. I don't mean the physical cave. I just mean when Jesus wants to deal with something in our lives and we stand on the precipice of it and we're going, I don't know that I can survive this. I've got some comfort with my coping systems. I've got some measure of comfort in just managing life the way it is. And it takes a risk to go down there.
Yeah.
And I think what Sarah and I want to do is encourage people. It's worth that risk. It really is. It, when Jesus takes you into a place, it's to set you free. It's not to torment you. It's not to, but it can be scary, particularly when you can't save yourself. And I think that's why for the last 30 years, I've focused on living loved, knowing that you're loved. When you know that you're loved, you can follow him. And when you don't know that you're loved, then every invitation he makes to us is scary, because it's going to take us beyond our own resources and our own capabilities.
I just kind of wonder about that for you guys. As you're back in Los Angeles, you don't really have a whole lot on the horizon. Like, what's going on in your heart now that you've landed from your last 3 months on the road and are settling back in and honestly looking at a completely new horizon that you haven't ever even seen before?
No, I can't even see the horizon from here. I am completely lost, to be honest with you, in very external, practical terms, to be compressed in this little apartment, to all of our stuff being scattered everywhere. I can't even, I mean, I'm still on my laptop because although I have found my computer, I have not found the keyboard to make that computer function. I have found my audio stuff, but again, I don't have the keyboard to let all that function. So
yeah,
I'll be on the laptop for a little bit till we either get a new keyboard or find the one. I've got a real nice ergonomic two-part twisty thing. It's a great keyboard, but the moment it is vanished somewhere. But, and I don't know if it got put in storage by mistake. We honestly have searched the apartment, cannot find it. But in a more practical, in a bigger sense than that, I have not been not in a home. I don't know if that's the grammar, that's horrible, but I have not been a home for 43 years. 44
Oh, wow.
Years. So being back in an apartment, you got to work through gates and just all the rules of being in an apartment again. And
community living in a different way.
Yeah, but this apartment complex is weird. You can walk out, see anybody, hardly ever. I don't know where everybody goes. It's full, but man, I'm usually out early for a walk. I don't see anybody, and then go out in the day. You may see one or two people, but right now we haven't gotten in the community of it, of, you know, knowing people, knowing our neighbors. We haven't done any of that yet. But it is very strange to be in a space that's not home and not settled. And we feel like we're still Abraham and Sarah in a country that we don't know yet or where we're going. We're probably settling in the area, but I mean, just not knowing even what life will look like beyond tomorrow. We really got up today. There's things we had to get done today, and tomorrow there's things we've got to get done tomorrow. And some things we'll try and get done by the end of the week. And it's going to be as day to day as our trip in the RV was. So maybe that was a good prep for just following Jesus right now and what that means for us.
So thinking back to when you and Sarah were starting out as newlyweds, and now you're kind of in a quote unquote newlywed starting out location.
Yeah.
With a blank slate in front of you, right? Like
what
do you see on, I guess, what is even landing on your heart for what the next season might look like, or, you know, what you and Sarah might be exploring together? I mean, any ideas at all? Any inclinations?
No.
None.
That's as honest as I can give it to you. I do feel like we've talked about this before we came on. I do feel like God's just telling me to lay low in December. Mm-hmm. Just get quiet. Just relax. Just take care of Sarah. Take care of what we need to do in terms of housing and some of that kind of stuff. And so I think this is the last podcast of the year for us, which will be kind of sad because I've got a whole list of stuff I'd love to talk about. But man, my mind is just, and my heart is just surging with things that God's, fresh things, new things God's putting there. But I don't know where all those pieces land or if I'll ever figure that out. But I do feel like God just saying, why don't you just quiet down? Just let the Christmas season come. Sarah's a real fan of Christmas. And so we're going to do some things to make, because she can't decorate her home. She doesn't have a home. So we don't even have her decorations. They're in storage somewhere. So, you know, it's not going to be Christmassy inside for her like that. So we're going to do some things to help her, because that's where she recovers some of her innocence as a child. So we're going to do some of that. So I'm really looking forward to what all that means. But we're going back to the thing we learned on the road, which each day has enough care of its own. So let's live inside each day at a time. And whatever God's going to bring, I'm probably going to do one more blog just to let people know it's going to be quiet in the month of March. It's March. Gee, how'd I get there? December. And then we're going to see what January holds when it comes around. Hopefully we'll be a little more settled by then, and we'll see what God has for us.
Yeah, man, it is literally a new, I know that we've talked a little bit about, man, and this is a long time ago, but talking about that whole space where you know, the start of the trailhead, where you're just logging in. Okay, this is the date that we're starting. This is how many people are with us, and we have no idea where we're going. You know, there might be some road, some cairns or some road marks or along the way, but even this, like, I don't even see like a defined trail in front of you guys that you're going to be hiking on into the wilderness. Like, it's just a mountain meadow with some trees and a horizon beyond it.
Yeah, if we could see the horizon. I feel like we're kind of down a hole. There's a lot of stuff, clothes and boxes and things. So we can't even see the horizon yet. But my heart is completely at rest. I don't have any anxiety over it. I don't have any anxious thoughts about it. I'm really excited to see what God unfolds. But right now, it's still completing the work that God called me to do to help Sarah be Sarah. So yeah. I'm really at peace with it. I don't need answers for tomorrow. We may have retired. The question we've asked ourselves almost every day for the last 3 months, have we retired? Maybe we have. I know one person said, if you've retired, you've got to find me another author, man, because I just live by everything you write. I'm going, okay, well, if that's true, you need to find somebody anyway called Jesus, not another human. But yeah, I just don't feel like we have any markers right now. But that's just a clean slate. And
yeah.
This is Jesus I trust here. This was all in his heart. I mean, a year ago, when you think about Sarah's in the throes of pain, I'm completely oblivious to it. And now April comes along and our whole lives change. The trajectory Sarah thought she was on to live alone and to, you know, try to bear her pain, that changed. When I was just, hey, happy writing a new book, going down that road, that kind of blows up in my face. But man, the love we've experienced, the sharing that we've done. Sarah gets back, not exhausted. I don't want to ever do that again. Sarah comes back and says, I want to keep encouraging people. She has really, people have known the previous Sarah and could see the way Sarah is in a room full of people now that are asking her questions about her journey and what she's sharing, interjecting, and how that has grown over the last 3 months, because we've been, not every day for sure, but 3 or 4 times a week, we've been in conversations with people, maybe individuals, might be smaller groups, but man, Sarah has just really been able to express so well what trauma has done to her and how God has set her free from it and just wants to encourage others. It's a journey worth going down. It's worth going down that big black hole. Yeah. And finding out what Jesus can do there, because I've loved that. What you talked about a few weeks ago about salvation really is all of that. It's setting the oppressed free and taking the brokenhearted and binding up that heart. And I don't know how to mass produce that. I really don't. Yeah. I think you've got to be with people more individually. And we may do that some in the apartment complex we talked about, maybe having a night where we invite people and sharing some of what Sarah's been through and encourage, because probably people here whose marriages are broke apart, who maybe are going to be alone at the holidays. And I don't know what God's going to ask us to do with all that, but our heart's much more toward, we want to walk alongside people, may do some Zoom sessions with Sarah, being able to share and just like we've done on the road, but there's so many people we didn't see who've wanted to engage with Sarah and I past what's happened in our lives. And I have a fresh desire to really equip what Joni was talking about a couple of weeks ago, people with caring hearts and listening ears. And there's a lot of pain in the world. And rather than all the other things we try and do, brand a following and create a ministry and do all that, just how do we touch the brokenhearted and how do we set the captive free? And are we alongside Jesus? He does that. So this is a really, really good season. I just don't know where it's going to go from here.
Well, And this, I mean, by far, this is the first time in our friendship that I've ever known you that you've been truly directionless. Not that you're feeling like I've never experienced you with a genuine wide open slate. Like you've always had like, well, you know, I've got this that I'm going to be doing. I've got this kind of on the road. I've got these invitations, or I've got this book that's in the works. You know, there's always been something.
Sure.
And yet now, like, experiencing you like this, where it's literally like continuing in the day to day of, Lord, I have no idea what you're inviting me into other than getting to walk with you and love of my wife. I have no idea what that looks like beyond that.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's a very different experience because you're kind of a planner go. And
yeah. And it's more challenging here at home, quite honestly, than on the road, yeah. Just negotiating where we're going next, who we're seeing. I had plenty that kept me going here. The danger is we're going to fall back on the patterns of Sarah running errands all day, live stream errands, and Wayne and Sarah errands. And Wayne's going to be back in a study doing stuff that he does. And neither one of us want to fall back into that pattern. So, yeah. But it's harder here.
Yeah.
Because everything's more routinized. On the road, everything was new every day. So how do we live in that newness? I don't know yet. We're going to try to figure that out as we go ahead.
So what kind, I'm really intrigued. What kind of place do you feel like you want to live in next? Does that make sense? Because your previous home that you and Sarah sold, like you had this gorgeous English garden that Sarah really poured her heart into. The house was kind of like this retreat space that was very relaxing that I know lots of people were able to go and just enjoy with you, but also you and your family enjoyed. What have you even thought about that? Is that something that you and Sarah have mulled over or thought about? I mean, obviously I know you guys don't want the steep terrain, but beyond that, like, what do you get a sense for what that culture might be or that feeling might be?
I don't. I mean, I have one word on my heart as I was praying one morning, the word oasis came to mind. Just that the place would be an oasis. And I don't know if that's for us, for other people. I got my eye on that word.
Okay.
Just because I felt like that wasn't mine. That's something God put in my heart. We've decided Sarah's biography, when it gets written, will be called There Will Be Flowers. So I'm sure there will be. Sarah can't wait to get her shoulder fixed and get back to some gardening. So there will be flowers for sure. We've even thought about, man, if we could find a place even more toward downtown here in Thousand Oaks, where Lewis and Maria live, My Friend Lewis podcast, if you've listened to that or maybe want to go back to it over the holidays here, working with those kids, they still have not been able to locate a place. So we thought, you know, if we could buy a place that like had a shop, like some contractor had, and we could convert that shop into a gym and those kids could come over and work out there, and Lewis and I could maybe do some Bible studies and stuff for people in the area and maybe people from outside the area coming in for a few days at a time. I don't know. We've thrown a lot of things swirling around, but I don't know what lands yet. I don't.
Have you had any space to process the fact that you've gone through what you've done this year? I mean, January 1, no thought or hint in your mind that you would currently be sitting where you are, living relationally where you are, living life where you are. What, I mean, talk to me about that. What are your thoughts on that? Even thinking about that gut reaction.
Yeah. I don't know that I've processed it yet. I think that's happening now because we got home and just had the holidays and we've kind of trying to settle a little bit into this apartment. So I've not really had time, but I think that's coming. I think I get lost at times with, oh my gosh, what did I lose that I had before? And there's some darkness there.
Okay.
And then there's the light of, gosh, this amazing rescue operation to bring my wife out of the darkness and into God's light. And even though that cost me a lot, what Sarah and I share now, I couldn't trade anything for that. I wouldn't. So that is so, so good. The relationship that we're enjoying and the conversations we're having. So that's beautiful. The price of that was, obviously, we don't have a house and we're not settled. And There's a way to kind of process that gets a little on the darker side, and there's a way to process that that is kind of like, this is so good. I have no idea what's going to happen, but we're in it together, and it almost is like newlyweds starting out. Although, you know, we're not. We've got 47 years of experienced relationship, and even more the last 3 months. And now we'll have a chance to see what God does with this part of our lives. And I've no doubt he's got something in mind, but I'm not too worried about what it is. Not at this point.
It's intriguing. I really just enjoy hearing this space as you guys are walking through it, right? Because it, you know, Jess and I, we've had some different ideas, different things in our mind and on our heart about where we might be next year, what we might be doing next year. And just have continued to feel the Father say, hold on, like I've got a way through this for you, but I want you to tend to the people in your life in the here and now. Like, don't get caught up or worried about the other things or, filling the margins of your life in with all these other things. And it's hard to live there. Right. Like it's for me anyway, being at rest and being at peace there is still very much a growing process. You know, I enjoy it. I enjoy I've been talking a lot about that idea, and that word, the guilt-free no, has been so, it's just resonated so deep with me. And I'm just seeing the ways that, whether that be with my immediate family or our extended family, or walking with Jess through that relationally, or me walking through that relationally, that has been such a good word that I have felt like the Lord just say. And, you know, thinking back on that, and, you know, I've been really feeling like, oh, well, I can force into this, or I can pressure this. Like, I need to figure out something to happen. There were some things that came up that were looking like we might be amped up and moving out to Western Michigan really fast, and, you know, possibly around the new year, and, you know, all this stuff. And I mean, it was kind of building to that. And then all of a sudden, like, we were out in Michigan this last time for a wedding back in October, and it felt like all that kind of just imploded. Like, there were some different things that had been talked about but fell through, and all this different stuff. And Jess and I just came back, and, you know, there was kind of that discouragement, like, right, like that dark side of, well, did we not hear you right, Lord? Were we missing something? You know, did we miss it? You know, whatever. And it's like, no, that we just need to rest. Like, we need to spend time, at least for Jess and I too, and our family, of just saying, no, we need to spend time investing in our girls, investing in our marriage. Jess and I started doing some great marital coaching with some friends of ours, which has been wonderful. Yeah, and that's been really intriguing to say, do you trust that you can live in the day to day, and that I will sort out the path before you? Do you trust that? Do you genuinely trust that in my process and in my love and in my journey that I'll be in the midst of that with you? But that I know the timing, because that, you know, I kind of went down the road of, well, we've talked about this with our friends and some of our community out in Michigan. We've really been planning on this. And now I feel like, you know, some of the own stuff that I've been working through is like being wishy-washy or being a dreamer, but never following through. And like, man, I don't want to be that person. And yet, I'm not going to, like, do I want to put my reputation and me not being that person, or even the perception, somebody perceiving that I'm that person, in comparison to who God's inviting me to be and where he's inviting Jess and I and our family to live. I don't know.
So you're not sure you may be headed to Michigan, or still think you might be?
It's definitely a great possibility, but we don't know. And I think the bigger piece of that is, how do we live and just continue to do life here in this space, loving one another and loving the people around us, instead of being like, oh, well, you know, we're good. Because we have people in Michigan that we would love. I still think there'd be some great things that would be a really good fit for our family if we were to move to Michigan. And yet, I can make that plan. Jess and I can dream and create ideas. And yet I want God to be the author of those steps, not me forcing it into existence, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does make sense. I mean, one of the things we talked about is maybe you and us and Kurt and Joni all get together and live in some communal community of healing kind of place. We joked about that. I mean, wouldn't that be wild if the Rices and us and Joni and Kurt are all hanging out and just being a place people could come and work through some stuff?
That would be wild. That'd be fun.
I don't know if that's, yeah, I don't know if it's our heart or God's.
Yeah.
I know what, one of the things I was thinking on the way back out here that's been really, you know, contemplating Wayne's best day ever. Yeah. And then kind of stacking on top of that, what's been going on with Sarah and being in that place for her, that being an important part, if not the key reason that God had me on the planet. Mm-hmm. It's made me retrace my whole journey with that push for authenticity. Because one of the things that always bothered me, why I just can't fit in with what everybody else does. I get criticized a lot for just not shutting up and going along with it, whatever it is. You know, I've had some actually say, why can't you just be okay with it? Mm-hmm. I'm going, I don't know why. I'm just not.
Yeah.
I'm not okay with it. And that push for authenticity has really been, I look back and say, God, I needed a faith authentic enough to endure the circumstances of this year and be a lover on the other side of it and not be jaded or angry or whatever. I needed that kind of faith. And I didn't know I needed that kind of faith. I didn't know going out, but this push for authenticity. There was a comment made on a recent episode of Yellowstone, which is a series that Sarah and I watch sometimes just because of our relationship with you, Kyle, and the whole cowboy Wyoming. Yeah, whatever. But this was a comment made because one of the lead characters has gone into politics inadvertently, virtually. And at one point he said, if you don't play the game will play you. And that just, that hit me so hard because I have not played the games most of my life. I don't play the games other people play. I don't play the gossip game relationally. And that's cost me relationships. I don't play the publishing game in a way that you're supposed to play it to make it work. It's not, I've been approached numerous times about writing the same book six times so you can keep making money at it. Mm. And even though people already have the content in the first book, you just keep producing it because that's what you do to make the financials of that real. And the political game the same way. I know part of the encouragement I think God has been to me, if I needed the faith I have now to get through the circumstances of the last year, then it was worth it. It's worth it. All the other people that wanted me to play the game and that punished me for not playing the game, it's worth it. Now, I have been played. I've given up things that I didn't need to give up. I've walked away from things I didn't need to walk away from. I could have fought my way back in. I could have made life hell for people who were treating me dishonestly and unfairly. And yet God was inviting me to different space. I don't have whatever it takes to play those games. Mm. And has there been a cost to it? There's been a great cost to it.
Yeah.
And yet there's also the most magnificent fruit of it that has made it all worthwhile. All the pain, all the not fitting in, all the not being able to, you know, climb the popularity ranks and build a brand and do all the things you're supposed to do to make this work. Yeah. And yet I can see now so clearly all those would have called me down different roads. Hmm. Roads I didn't really want to go down. This unrelenting passion for something authentic was what I needed to get me through this season, to help Sarah find her freedom, to live in that even when other people come against
you.
And I say it that way. And that reminded me, as I was thinking about that this morning and even thinking about doing this podcast the other day, I pulled out an old note I got last spring in the middle of the painful throes of this from a good friend in Texas. Mm. And she wrote this. She said, just as an encouragement, I'm not reading it for me. I know there are lots of other people that need to hear this for them that have been like me, haven't played the game, have quested for a more authentic faith and freedom. that it has cost you. I mean, I know it's cost you, Kyle. You've had many leadership opportunities that you could have explored and, you know, been in a very different place than you are today.
Oh my gosh,
in terms of notoriety and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's, there's a game to be played there, and some people play it, and they play it convincingly, and they play it without seemingly any kind of conscience confusion. My conscience was always violated by those things, and I don't even know why. They just were. And other people took that as judgment against them for playing it. And I didn't mean it that way even. It's just, I can't go that way. But this is what someone wrote to me. He said, "You are a relentlessly truthful human, and you are my friend because my heart only can relax and be safe with a truthful person. It's foundational to my soul. I am persuaded God is intertwined somehow in truth. You are unafraid to live wholeheartedly. Worst of all, for dark things in the invisible spiritual realm, you are free. And the enemy hates that about you. You are willing to leverage your life for others, and the enemy hates that about you." This is no joke. He came hard after you. He's stupid, because you are taking all that love God has poured into your heart and shining all you have on Sarah. You are so committed to her healing, you plan to give it all to your last breath. And he didn't expect that. He being the enemy. And I tell you what, I think in these last days, if these are in fact the last days, and when, again, look at all the things going on in the world and the trauma of our times and the pain of our times and the brokenness of our times and the polarity of our times, what God wants is people like Joni talked about that have a caring heart and a listening ear. Man, whatever you need to do to ask Jesus to develop that in you, by all means, go do it.
Yeah.
And whatever authenticity you need to be a lover of the truth and to be in the world, not as someone who will chart their course by illusions and delusions. And I know it's hard to say it, because people who are deluded don't know they're deluded.
Yep.
Which could be me. You know, people say, "Well, you could be. I could be." But boy, when you lift a conscience and you stop playing the game, such a powerful thought. If you don't play the game will play you.
Yeah.
And it has, but on the other side of that, if you don't let it own you, if you're not playing the game, and then it starts to play you, Jesus has answers for that. And the answers all develop something deep in the core of your being that you will need someday, that you'd have no idea is coming, but you'll be in a place to stand with him, to stand with someone else in a way that brings light and life into dark places. And to me, that's what life is really about. It's not about just being comfortable. It's not about just paying the bills. It's not about just doing what everybody else is doing and find enough sports and entertainment to keep you happy. It really is finding that authentic expression of life that Jesus has for you, living there. Like you talked about the guilt-free no, and then we talked about the wholehearted yes, which the bracket of those two things, which we never intended. But it was such a beautiful thing, I think, that God did. There is the guilt-free no that we're allowed. And then there's the wholehearted yes. When we're talking about that podcast, I listened to it with Sarah again. The idea of that, what it says in the Psalm somewhere, that your people will volunteer freely in the day of your power, is one of the Psalms. It's not every knee will bow and every tongue confess. You just have to admit that God's the best thing in the world. But it's the wholehearted. They will volunteer freely. And that's how I feel about my life right now. I am wholeheartedly yes to whatever Jesus wants to do. And I don't even know what that means. I have no idea tomorrow morning what it means. I have no idea when I get done with this what it means, but we'll find out. I can sit here now and know. And this is what beyond all the unknowns I have, I know that this has been a worthy journey, that all that God needed to do to find Sarah in the darkness and confront her with the most painful reality she could possibly have to face and watch the healing that has worked in her and the healing that's worked in me in the process. And the 3 months we had in our little box on wheels, my gosh, it was extraordinary. And I don't know when we go next, but it may be sooner than later, because I don't sure how long we're going to live in this little box here. The box on wheels had a big front yard, right? Include Carlsbad Cavern and trees in the fall. And it was awesome. So we'll see what God does with that. But man, I tell you what, this has been the worthiest of all journeys. It could end today and I would not be, I would have been completely fulfilled in my life. And yet I know God's not done yet, no matter what Wikipedia says. there's still, God has the purpose unflowing in my life, but I think it's going to be something I'll have to be far less intentional about. Mm. And just as I live in his pleasure and I live at his pleasure and I let him live with me in mine, I think it's going to unfold. And I'm excited to see what that might be. I'm also excited to wake up tomorrow and just, I mean, Sarah and I have been apart all day today. She had some errands to run. She's been gone. She got back. We started this podcast. I've not seen my baby all day today. And I can't wait to sit down to dinner with her. I can't wait to have the evening with her. I can't wait to just enjoy her presence. Not even, we're going to do something fun together. Yeah. We're just going to be in each other's presence. And that presence is going to lead us to whatever's next. And I think Jesus wants that to us, whether we're married or not. I mean, you may not have a partner like that. You may have, as we've met many people on the road, got partners that are less than supportive of each other's spiritual journeys. And they're more self-indulgent at times than finding a way to us. But man, whatever your life circumstance situation is, Jesus has a way to take you through it into his life. And if you've got to go through some dark bits, if you need to go down the Carlsbad cavern with him, go with him. Yeah. It's you will learn so much. And yeah, it will be through pain and tears. But every writer in the New Testament said, this is how his best work gets done in us. It's not when everything's rosy and fine and dandy and there's all kinds of resource and money and, you know, great place to live and all. It's not that. It's in the moments when he just leads us. And pain is what works character. And it transforms us at a level that nothing else can. And like I said, I think this has been a worthy journey. I wouldn't trade anything that's happened to this point. And I'm really kind of in a wonderful place to see how it unfolds next. Mm. But to do that, I've got to live through a bit of a mess.
And a little bit of uncertainty, unsettledness, disconnect, and yet
chaos.
Chaos.
There's a little bit of chaos around. But God's the presence that gives meaning in the chaos, not even to it necessarily. It's just meaning in it. He's in it. There's stuff to learn, things to grow. The chaos was coming anyway, so don't worry about, you know, did God orchestrate the chaos? Of course he didn't. But the chaos is the default system of this world that's broken. And you can play a game and manage your way around it, or you can stop playing the game and find your way into his life. It was interesting, we're going to call the Jake book movie Out of the Game.
Really?
That was the name of the movie. I don't know that it's off the dot. I know I need to call. People keep asking, how's the movie coming? I know I haven't heard anything in a while, but so I had to call before I get all those emails. But we're going to call it Out of the Game because that's what Jake was doing. Jake was getting out of the game of religion. And it's painful, man. People still in the game, they hate you when you get out of the game. And people you love and admire, they'll put some distance between you because you're not playing by the rules. And darn it, whether it's a broken family system or a corporate system or whatever, that's a game that you just don't have the heart to play anymore. Then there's good things that can happen. But I'm telling you what, it's both. There's hell in the hallway and there's joy in the rooms and doors that God opens.
Yeah, I love that. That just makes me think of a conversation that I had earlier because we got into some stuff over the holidays where it's like, okay, Lord, I want to continue to do relationship and life with these people that I love and I care about. And yet they're also not living in, for example, in the freedom of a guilt-free no. And so how do I continue to enjoy them, love them, encourage them, do life with them, but not play the game? And, you know, and I know like part of it was, well, how do I not play the game and it not be disruptive? Well, it's going to be disruptive because as soon as somebody stops not playing the game, then yeah, it's going to throw a bit of a wrench in the deal. But that can be a very kind invitation too, even if it is disruptive and even if it is uncomfortable at times or unfamiliar, at least at the very least.
And isn't that Jesus' example?
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus was, he was so gentle about it. He wasn't in the face until the very last session with the Pharisees when he's pulling out the scribes, Pharisees, hypocrite card.
Yeah.
He just gently is refusing to play the religious leadership game they wanted him to play. He refused to play the political game that Herod wanted him to play or Pilate wanted him to play. But he never made people feel bad if they played the game.
No.
You want to play a game? Play the game. I'm just not playing the game. And that's disruptive enough to let the kingdom of God find access to the world. And if we keep playing the game, then the kingdom of God doesn't get access to your friends, to your family, to people. And your family and friends may reject the kingdom as it comes. Some do. But you know what? I tell you, being on that edge of where the kingdom gets revealed in the world and loving the best we see. And I'm going to finish out that chart, the first of the year, a transformational thing. I said the whole back end of this chart just blown up in a lovely way for me. And I can't wait to kind of break out what that is. But we won't get it in today, obviously. But I'm telling you, it's just such a beautiful thing to see, you know, God, the way he works, when we flow with him instead of play the game. It's so easy to play
the game.
Oh, it is.
Oh, absolutely.
It's so easy. Oh, my gosh. And it's so hard to just not play the game, but not make a stand for not playing the game.
Yes.
Just don't play it.
Yeah.
And find ways to love those same people without the game. Yeah. And that's where real love breaks into people's hearts, I think.
That reminds me of just an image that I had this week as I was working with an individual, and we were talking about, have you ever seen a cattle trail where, like, especially like going down to like a water tank or that kind of thing, where the cattle have been walking the same path and it really digs down in the earth? And
I think I have.
Yeah. And then eventually like water will start running down and that'll carve it deeper, etc. Well, it just, like, we were talking about like the pathways in our life that are disruptive or are unhealthy, that are the game, right? And they're familiar and they're comfortable. They may not be great. They may be very maladaptive. They may be relationally destructive, but at least they're familiar. And we know how to play in that game.
And other people are doing it, so we fit in.
Yeah. And literally the image that I had was Jesus was standing with a shovel and he was literally filling dirt into the cattle trail so that the trail wasn't as deeply entrenched. And so if I wanted out of the trail, it was a lot easier for me to get out of the trail.
That's beautiful.
It was a lot easier. And he just kept filling that in with his love and with his life and his kingdom. And slowly the trail, like, if you've ever done, and I'm nerding out on my rancher thing, and so this was, again, very specific to me. But eventually, as you fill in those trails, eventually they level out to where there is no trail anymore. And then eventually the prairie takes back over. And the grass fills in, it heals, and then over time, and it sometimes takes a really long time if you don't have somebody that's there with a shovel that's filling in that cattle trail. Sometimes it takes a long time, but eventually it's just prairie again, and it's back into the wild and into the country. And it was just such a cool picture to me of, like, man, it's not a game anymore. Like, he's filling it in, and it's a lot easier to get out of the game. It's a lot easier. Even if I fall back into that trail, it's easier and easier for me to accept the invitation back into the kingdom.
Well, that's beautiful. And that's obviously what we all want Jesus to do in us, I hope. It's how do I live more authentically, more freely, even if it costs you. It's going to prepare you to be in a place, because the stuff of this year was nothing I could see coming, nothing I could plan for. I couldn't go to a seminar and prep for it. Just in the moment, you've got to have a faith real enough to walk you through it. And if you do, then the kingdom gets to come and life happens. Well, I think that's it for 2022. I hope you have a blessed Christmas, Kyle.
You too, Wayne. And a great rest family. Of your new year, too.
And I'm sure we'll talk in the meantime. But for the rest of us all, I'll see you in 2023.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.